Our next guest on the program has been on television and seen in films for many, many years. TV shows like Sybil, Friends, CSI, Seinfeld, ER, movies such as Falling Down and Into the Night. And then she took a little break in her career to go back to school. But she is back with a brand new series from her brother-in-law, David E. Kelly, that comes to ABC Tuesday, November 17th at 10 p.m. The series is Big Sky, and we are so happy to be joined this afternoon by Dee Dee Pfeiffer.
Hi, Rich. Thank you for having me.
Well, yeah, we both needed a break from Anderson Cooper, so here we are.
Oh, my God. Actually, my boy, I call them the boys, which are Dee Lemon and CeCe, Chris Cuomo. They're my boys. Because they're able to have a little bit of humor in a really, really stressful time.
Indeed, yeah. Well, listen, I'm excited that we get to talk about something else here for a few minutes and very excited for the brand new series. But before we talk about Big Sky, let's talk about what you've been up to over the last decade or so. And you've been very busy.
Well, yeah, actually, I know a lot of people are like, you just disappeared off the earth for 10 years. Well, I was actually really busy. 10 years ago, I decided at that time in my life, I had always done a lot of volunteer work and a lot of things when it comes to social welfare and just people in general. And while trying to, you know, always get the next acting gig, 10 years ago, I hit a place in my life where I really wanted to help, but on a larger scale. So someone had said, and I think it was actually my sister said, well, you need to go get a degree. And I said, okay. So I walked up to a community college parking structure and said, hey, where do you go to talk to someone about getting, I guess, a degree? They were like, over there. And I literally went in there and said, I want to help people. And they're like, okay, well, what degree do you want? I said, I don't know. You tell me. Literally had not a clue of what I was doing. So, I mean, I graduated in 1982. If you do the math, no cell phones, no computers, nothing. And my education was challenging at best. So I started from, I'd probably take a second grader education level. And so that's what took me, 10 years.
Well, yeah. And then you graduated from college, you got a degree, but that wasn't enough. You went back and got an advanced degree.
Well, no, what actually happened, it was actually 10 years solid of going because I had two kids, you know, being on my own, raising two boys. So I wasn't able to ever really do full time. That's why it was really pulled out, you know, for 10 years. And so I literally, when I got offered this role, I was finishing my master's program, my master's of social work at UCLA when I got this job. So while I was filming the pilot, I was still writing papers for my finals for my master's degree. So there was a little overlap there. So I'm a social worker. I have like letters after my name.
Well, yeah. That is wonderful. And then this role and this much anticipated series, Big Sky, came your way. It premieres November 17th at 10 p.m. on ABC. I know it takes place in Montana. Where did you film?
Well, we started in New Mexico. This was right before the pandemic. We went there and we did what's called pre-production, which is everything before you actually film. Hair, makeup, wardrobe. We actually met each other and actually like shook each other's hands, hugged. I could see their face without a mask. It feels like 1,000 years ago. And we started pre-production. I believe they had like one shot. And then I flew home because I wasn't going to film for another week. So I flew home to tell my boys, hey, okay, we're going to do this. Now we're going to start filming this puppy. But before, literally as I was flying home, my friends were going, dude, you got to go get toilet paper. And I was like, what are you talking about? So they were like, there's a pandemic and we're going to get shut down. I said, oh, you're just all hysterical. Just, relax. Well, I did go to Costco. I've been traumatized ever since. I've never seen anything like it. Just to get some toilet paper. I was lucky to grab one of the last four bushels of it. And we shut down. Just dead, shut down like the whole country. So we waited and waited like everybody. And then we got our pickup again, but this time we are now in Vancouver. So that's where we landed. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was quite a journey to get this up and going. And because we started, stopped, moved to out, you know, past the borders. Now we're in Vancouver and there you go. Yeah.
Well, a show is produced by a guy you know well, your brother-in-law, David E. Kelly, who we claim as a Mainer. He was born here in the state of Maine, so we always think of him as one of ours.
Yeah, David. Yeah, he is. He's a good one to claim, isn't he?
He sure is, yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you one thing about that man. He's so shy. And you know what they say, there's a lot going on with calm waters. Well, that's him. Like when you meet him, you know, he's just really shy and really, it's just so sweet. And then all this stuff comes out of him and it's writing where you're like, that's all inside your head? You know what I mean? He just doesn't show any signs of all of that. But he's a mad fisherman. Like, that's where his passion really comes out.
That's why you set something in Montana then, right?
It's also CJ Box's novel was in Montana. But David couldn't be more happy that we're in Canada because he loves to fish. And fishing, there's some fantastic fishing here. Although he's not been here since we started because of COVID. So there you go, right?
Yeah. What a terrific cast as well. Yourself, Kylie Bunbury, one of my favorite character actors, John Carroll Lynch, Brian Garrity. Looks like a pretty talented group assembled there.
Oh my God. I'm not joking. I am so grateful to not only be employed at 56 years old, because there in itself, there's a miracle there, but also to be working with such an incredible cast. Everybody is just so talented. I love the fact that we come from all different generations of actors. Like, I'm recycled. I've kind of, left me back. I'm recycled. This is my new phase, my new title. And again, I just sit back, even just around the table read, which is now Zoom. I find myself just watching, everybody just say the lines, and they're so amazing. And I get chills. I go, oh my God, the audience is going to go crazy. Yeah, it's exciting.
What can you tell us about the show?
Okay, all I can say about the show is this. Buckle up. It's going to be a bumpy ride. When I read the pilot, I read the last two pages over again 3 times because I was like, did I read that right? So it's going to be one of those where don't think you just when you think you figured it out, you did not. It's scary. It's sexy. It's emotionally charged. You might want to think twice next time you go on a road trip during in any isolated areas. I'll say that. And it's so great because the story just keeps unfolding into other storylines of interest. So I just have to say the B and C storylines are literally just as interesting as the A storyline. It's just one of those where it's jam-packed full of characters you want to get to know better, or you love to hate, or you can't believe the conversations they're having. You're like, did they just say that? Because it's going to, let's just say this. There's cable shows and then there's major network shows. This one feels a lot more like cable-ish. So it's a little more than what you're expecting on a major network. So that's fun.
Dee Dee Pfeiffer stars in Big Sky beginning Tuesday, November 17th, 10 p.m. on ABC. We talked about the ensemble, and you've been part of some terrific ensembles in the past. And I think right away of working with Sybil Shepherd and Christine Baranski, that was a pretty fair ensemble too.
Oh my God. Yeah. That was a fantastic show. That was my very first big show. I mean, I've been working and stuff, but that was my first huge show. So I was definitely a newbie. I was like a baby just looking and learning and watching from the ones that are just great, and went on to then also do For Your Love, D.W. Moffat, Holly Robinson. I've been so fortunate and to be on a lot of different incredible ensembles, such as Friends, Seinfeld, Ellen. If you really want to go back, we can go back to, I've been on a lot. It starts with Simon and Simon, if you're really, and Murder, She Wrote. I go way back.
You were also on one of, going through your IMDb page, you were on one of my favorite shows, and it was one of the earliest HBO series, Dream On.
Oh my God, Brian Benben. Oh yes. Yes. That was so fun. What an amazing, whatever happened to Brian? What is going on? Where did he go? I think people were probably saying that about me. Where did she go? That was such a great, great show. Betty Thomas. We had a lot of fun. She just kept calling his nickname. It's like she called Brian Chuck and she called me Little Chuck. Chuck, Little Chuck, get over here. That was fun. That was a great show, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Now, you also did a Seinfeld, and we've talked to a number of people who guessed it on Seinfeld, and it was an adjustment for some of them, especially if they didn't have any background in improv.
Oh, my God. Seinfeld, what I'd like to describe Seinfeld is a moving train that just works. Every single piece works together like a moving train, just smooth and ka-chung, 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 right? And it's a guest star. You're asked to jump on a moving, well-oiled train that works really well. And so it's intimidating. But I got to tell you, when you score a guest star role on Seinfeld, you like win the lotto, because that just, you know, you, I've done like a lot of work, but I got to tell you, that Seinfeld, people still go, you were on Seinfeld. It's just because it's such a popular show that crosses over. You know, even my boys who are teenagers catch it and go, that's a really funny show. And I'm like, honey, yes, it was and it still is. It's one of the shows that's just still, you can watch it over and over again. I think a lot of people watched it over and over again, like Friends, during the COVID too.
Yeah.
Because it's just kind of like warm chicken soup. It just feels right.
Yeah, you're on another show too, and I was just talking about this show with a friend the other day, and I'm surprised it hasn't had the life in reruns that some of its contemporaries did, because it was another great ensemble with terrific writing, and that was Wings.
Oh my God, yeah, Wings was such a great show. You know what's so crazy about, talk about change. When I got hired, I don't even remember what happened. I was hired as like one character, and through the week, every single day, she kept changing. Like I was like, I was hired as a girl, dated him, and then the next day I was gay, and then the next day I was, like every day I was changing, and I can't even remember now by the end what do we end up shooting. But that was another fantastic ensemble. I have to say, I'm a team player. I love working with groups of people, which is when I did my degree in social work. I was on a multidisciplinary team working with those experiencing homelessness and mental illness and substance use. I just love groups of people who come together, right? And, you know, you're throwing ideas around and throw that creative ball around. So and here I am again, right? On another fantastic ensemble. I love that. I just love that.
Now, I have to ask you about one more TV series, because Stephen King owns our station. You did a couple episodes of another terrific series, The Dead Zone.
The Dead Zone. Yes. That's another one that, oh, my God, this younger population, right? They really love that show. And I get a lot of younger people going, oh, The Dead Zone. I love scary, creepy. I mean, I watch like Ancient Aliens and stuff. I'm all over that stuff. And I'm just like my food, spicy, hot, crunchy. It's like things I watch. And yeah, that was a great show. Another fantastic one. Thank you, Stephen.
and a number of movies through the years as well, working with some other talented folks, Falling Down with Michael Douglas, and what I loved, Into the Night with Jeff Goldblum.
Oh my God, Jeff was hysterical. He is so great. Like, did you see him on these commercials now and stuff?
Oh, he's brilliant.
He's just like, he can take one little scene. There's a good example of, there's no such thing as like a little scene, only little actors. Like, he takes these little scenes and he's so memorable. And I'll never forget. That was my very first gig. I got my SAG card on Into the Night. I looked at my sister. No, I looked at one of them and said, hey, you want a date? And I said, you want a party? Oh, I looked at Jeff and said, you want a date? And then he's like, huh? And Michelle, do you want a party? And she's like, no. I'm like, whoa, rude. Okay. I still to this day watch Jeff and go, wow. I'm actually, it's funny you mentioned him. With Denise, I'm trying to do a little bit of that with Denise, right? Where, because I don't have a lot of screen time in this show, but I'm pivotal. You know, I'm very much the rock in a very crazy story. I'm the grounding character, but yet kind of funny and the go-to gal. And so I'm very much looking over at how Jeff plays how he approaches characters. And I'm kind of trying to do a little bit of that with Denise. And I hope that comes through. We'll find out, right?
I like that name, Denise Brisbane. It sounds mysterious, maybe a little exotic.
Well, Denise dances to her own beat. She stays in her own lane. Gossip is her currency, but not in a vicious, mean way. She uses it, I think, as a way to create rapport with people. She's very much the office manager. You know where to find her every day. She loves what she does. She loves people. She loves helping people. Again, she's a little bit of the light in a very crazy story, a very quirky story. She's able to find a little bit of humor in this piece, right? Which is good, because sometimes in these pieces that are really thrill-driven and a little scary and like you don't know what's happening, you need that character that's going to get you to smile and laugh just for a minute so you can jump back on the scary ride again.
So now, are you going to do social work when you're between gigs? How will you balance these two careers?
Well, you know, I got to say, you know, when I came back, I didn't realize I mean, I did realize that I had still a fan base that still followed me. And I thought that that was so amazing. And I'm so grateful for that. And so I thought it would be tragic to abandon my fan base and tragic to abandon my social worker degree and my bachelor's of psych and my passion to want to help people. And it also took me 10 years. So my idea is to blend the two together and create something where I can help people on a larger scale one day. I'm not sure what that looks like yet, but I'm thinking and I have some ideas. But for the time being, since it's COVID and we certainly as a society really need a little bit of a break, I'm able to help people through be part of a fantastic new series to give people a break at least 1 hour a week, considering, oh my God, all the stuff we're going through as a society and a country. It's a lot.
By the way, it took me 13 years to get through college. So I'm just saying, I was hoping they'd name a building after me when it was clear that wasn't going to happen. I finished up.
Yeah, I got to tell you. Yeah, there was a few times I was like, I'm very right-brained. I'm not left-brained. I discovered I had learning disabilities. It was quite a journey. I mean, when they gave me the test to see what was going on, and they gave me like 2 + x = 5, I was like, oh, excuse me, ma'am, there's a typo. There's an X in this equation. They're like, oh, Lord. They're like, this is algebra. I said, right. Like I said, there's a typo in this equation.
That's what I said. Letters and stay in your own lane, letters. You don't belong with the numbers.
Really? And then I love this. They gave me the writing test assessment. And they gave me, I guess, what's called the prompt. Like, write about this thing. So I wrote like 3 pages. There was maybe 2 periods, maybe a comma. Misspelled words, but boy, I was opinionated. And they were like, she has no idea how to even write a paragraph properly. And I was like, thesis statement, what's that? Huh? Grammar? You know, and I go, but what? And they're like, I said, but yeah, but look what I said. They're like, it's not really what you said. It's how you say it. So yeah, I had a lot of prerequisites, a lot, just to get to the AA degree. So I appreciate people who struggle, so you took you some time. I get that. And I was, you know, raising 2 boys on my own along the way too. So
that's the same degree that my daughter is getting. She's working towards a master. She's finishing up her senior year now, and then we'll be working towards a master's in social work.
Oh, that's fantastic. What's your area of concentration?
Drug and substance abuse rehab.
Okay. Tell her to follow me because my area of concentration is substance use, mental illness, and those experiencing homelessness.
Okay, I know.
Yeah, that's my population. But out of all three, it's definitely the highlighted one would be substance use. Absolutely, hands down. And tell her to watch me because I'm going to be coming out with an exclusive story about my own journey. Oh. So I love what she's doing. Love, love, love. It's such a fantastic degree. Underappreciated, at least in the States, you know, just it's like when you start up 50,000. I mean, good luck with that if you're like me with 2 kids. And but I just still am amazed by those who continue to go out there and get the degree and go out there and try to advocate, giving those a voice who don't have it and help those in need. It's just, God bless her, man. You got a good seed there.
She had started doing some nursing stuff in school. And then as she got into college, she gravitated more towards social work. And then the substance abuse came about in the sort of the concentration in the last year or so.
Yeah. Well, it's such a, we have an epidemic of it. And, you know, and until we understand that there's still a lot of social stigma around it. And we still have this idea that people who have addictions can control it. It's like, why can't you just stop? You know, this until we can understand, it's like telling somebody to stop having their cancer. It's a disease, mm-hmm. You know, and it's not treated or looked at like that. And also, in a lot of addicts' defenses, we don't have a lot of treatment plans that are really effective on a broad scale where insurance companies actually cover these treatments that are effective. I know here in Canada, they use harm reduction. It's very controversial. And in some respects, it actually does work for certain populations, so there's just there's a lot more work to be done in that area. And certainly mental health, as we know as well, and homelessness. I mean, especially now with the pandemic, all of these areas.
Yeah. And they're all sort of coming together.
Yeah.
There's a lot of overlap between all of them. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what you have to do is when you approach these people, it has to be very, the assessment has to be very individual and coming from a, she knows, a biopsychosocial perspective. It can't be linear anymore. It's not just addiction. It's not just, you know what I mean? You have to really look at it from a different lenses. And what I really love about the social worker degree, I'm not sure where she's getting hers, but UCLA, they forced us to, which at first I was really irritated about, but now really grateful. We were taught on a, about macro, meso, and micro level of social work, meaning, you know, policy, you know, so upstream perspectives, right? Looking at policies, are they, what are being implemented? Are they really working effectively or just getting the politician fatter, right? You know, and the data in the field, right, to help create workable and effective policies. Meso, community, what does that look like? And then of course, individual micro when it comes to individual treatments. And again, coming from it from three different lenses of biopsycho and social perspective. It's so like dynamic, and the social worker degree allows you to learn all of these facets. So you come into it with, it's such a beautiful degree. I don't know why it's not more honored, and at least give them a paycheck where they can pay their rent and right. And
yeah, and that's, that is a little bit of a concern for my daughter, but part of the reason too why she didn't stop at just a bachelor's. She's working towards the master's in hopes of being able to do more with it.
Yeah. Is she also going to be able, is she going to go for her licensed clinical social worker?
I believe that's part, she's attending the University of Maine, actually. I believe that getting the license is part of the master's program with them.
Oh, she's doing that dual thing. Yeah, that's fantastic. We don't have that. I had to go to UCLA and get the master's. And if I wanted to continue on, I'd have to work in an agency that where I could get supervision for my licensure's hours.
Yeah, she's actually doing getting hours, doing a placement as part of her senior year program, and then we'll have to do a further one as part of the master's program. So.
Oh my God, your accent is so Maine. You sound like David's family. I love David's family. We always get together on Thanksgiving and we always go, we love your accent. They're like, we love your accent. We're like, no, you have the accent. No, I love his family. But that is fantastic. You know, I'm not sure how it works in Maine, but I know in LA, a lot of my supervisors who have, who are still working on their license, that when you get your license, LCSW, licensed clinical social worker, the money does go back up. It gets up 80. So at least you can now, with the taxes in LA anyways. You probably don't have the taxes we do, but.
Yes, I think it's probably a little bit less here.
Yeah, we just get gouged in tax and you just can't make a living, you know, on that really, unless you have another income. A lot of my friends, they moonlighted in the PMRT, which is basically like emergency outreach group that goes out and does 5150s. It's pretty hardcore, but it is like after hours on weekends. A lot of people I know pick up some really good money doing that, and they remain in the field. So I'm not sure if that's something she's going to look into or not. She'll get exposed to all that stuff, man. Because that's fantastic. Wow. You don't meet a lot of people who, at least I don't, who even know what we do. They go, why do you want to get a degree that takes kids out of people's homes? And I said, well, first of all, that's not the objective of a social worker. Their objective is to go into every home and say, please prove to me that I don't want to take your kid, but prove to me why I should leave the kid here. You know, that's, you know, they're not going in to take it out, you know.
And Victoria has gotten a little bit of that pushback at times, but she's pretty good at explaining it to people.
Well, I always explain it this way. I chose not to go in the field with children because the foster care system sucks. I'm sorry, it just does. It does not work. It's a broken old system that needs a major facelift. And the vetting of the foster care parents need to be vetted. That's not to say all of them are terrible. That's not true. But when was the last time you really heard success story of children being in the foster care system and not getting more jacked up than they already were when coming from a abusive family, right? So for me, it's the system. It's, you know what I mean? And it's the system, not the social workers, you know, and not to say social workers are not at fault sometimes. It's like cops, a lot of good ones, and you got some nasty ones in there. It just happens. Same thing with doctors, right? Actors. Some actors are really cool. Some are jackasses. It's just the way it is, right? So, but I think about it, you know, when you go into the helping profession, generally speaking, it's because you care about people, and it's certainly not about the buck you're making. Mm-hmm. Not really a lot of people in social welfare, any degrees make a lot of money. I mean, right? But as a social worker, we're taught that we work with in broken systems, old systems that need changing. So that's something else that people are trying to advocate for. Those social workers who I know work on a macro level, right, who are looking at policies, and we have to keep giving them data on what works and, more importantly, what doesn't work, you know. And, you know, the results are in the children. Mm-hmm. And if you're telling me the system doesn't need revamping, then how come, look at the success rate versus the failure rate in these children being thrown in a system that is broken at best.
Yeah.
Right. So you have a bunch of people trying to go out and want to help, but the system works against them. So that therein lies the problem. Right.
Right. You have to fix the system before you can actually help the people.
Yeah. Because I can tell you right now, when you have a caseload of 35, 40 people, how in God's earth are they supposed to hit all those homes effectively?
Right.
And then paperwork that is outrageous, right? Mm-hmm. And not get burnout before they even can pay their student loans back.
Because right.
Burnout, right? So there's a lot of things, and this is one of the things I really wanted to do, is to bring light, not blame, but it's kind of like, let's figure out, let's isolate where the problem is and then brainstorm on how to fix it. Because for me, it's kind of like, if I'm going to tell my sons, listen, here's a problem, then we need to brainstorm how to fix it. Otherwise, you're just bitching.
Right.
Right.
Right. You'd point out a problem without offering or at least working towards a solution is not helpful.
Exactly. Exactly. So I do know this is, first you have to, yeah, is this working? No. Okay. Well, this is where that multidisciplinary group think comes together, which I love, you know. It's happening on an environmental level in Singapore. The buildings they're building are amazing, and it's helping the environment, climate change. They're pretty. So, you know, they're not pushing away the wilderness. They're incorporating it into the buildings. They're just doing a lot of fantastic work, because a lot of people are coming together going, hey, wait a minute. I think, versus sitting around yelling about it. Let's start. Okay. That's step one. Now what's step two? Let's go into action.
Yes.
Right. And I think now this, for me, this election, my son said it best. He said, you know, at least now we know where the problems are. They're all out on the table. And now we can learn from what the people who are following Trump versus those who are not. And what that, you know, he's like, now we're hopefully in a place now we can listen to each other. We need that common person in the middle to say, okay, I hear you over here on the left. I hear you over here on the right. Okay. The answer lies somewhere here in the middle, and everybody needs to give up a little bit, because we can't play the rules fair all the way to the left or all the way to the right. It's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where most of the answers come from. Right. So hopefully we can get there.
Yeah. But we're not going to get there as long as we keep making each other the enemy, and we stop. And like Canada, they said this on one of their newscast radios. They said they stopped listening to each other a long time ago. And as a result, this is what's going on. So it's almost like we need a reset button. We need to stop the bleeding so we can start the healing. Mm. You know, you're not healing while you're bleeding. I'm exhausted from the noise, and I know I'm not alone.
Mm.
If anything, I just want, let's just get Biden in, because I do believe, I mean, not everyone agrees with this politics, but it's not about that. How about let's just save our democracy for a minute. Let's just save our democracy, right? Because without democracy, we're nothing. And then I think I do think he's going to try his hardest to at least listen to everybody. And that means everybody on both sides, and
he does have that history of being willing to work with both sides. So that will be, hopefully he can convince everybody to do the same.
Well, I do believe to think that he is somewhere in the middle, and that's why he kind of pisses off his own party, if you really want to go there, you know. And by the way, he was able to work with, what's his face?
McConnell. Church.
Yeah, there's history back there with them, and they have worked together. They've been able to effectively come to compromises. because, you know, they're too level-headed old time, well, you know, sitting down and saying, okay, come on, let's talk. And there's history when he was working with Obama, you know, that they were able to come to some compromises, because that's what it is. But more importantly, I do think he is going to be able to stop the bleeding. He can calm us down. Let's get COVID under control.
Yep.
We don't have to shut everything down. Everyone needs some help. We need a stimulus package. Let's help people out in a time of need. You know, and, you know, one thing at a time. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. This man has a big, fat, pregnant elephant. God bless him. Right? But I know that he's going to look at it like he has everything else in his life, which has been unmanageably painful. When you lose children, you lose your wife. He's had to get through, wow, tough times. I think he can get us through this tough time. He's not going to fix everything overnight. I don't think anybody can, but he can start the process and put us in the right direction again. That's the best we can ask at this point, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I got two boys over there who one's 18 and he just voted. That's been a heavy conversation. That was over the phone, and I wanted to be there looking at him in his eyes to explain to him the dynamics of what's going on, the magnitude and the history, you know. And it's hard because, you know, 18, he just wants to be with his friends, and he just doesn't understand why this is all so absurd. And he's just like, am I the only one who's getting this crap? And I said, no, you're not, honey. You're not. And so, and the 15-year-old's just going, oh, joy, I can't wait to be an adult. He's like, I have a 15-year-old who's like, I am perfectly fine staying here in my room and do my online school. I don't want to drive. I don't want to grow up. The world's just going to shit in a handbag. And he's just like, Mom, can you come home and make me a sandwich?
I'm
like,
there you go. Good to be 15.
He just turned 15. And there was a time where kids got excited about getting older, and I don't know.
No, slow that up as much as you can.
I think a lot of them are kind of going, yeah, I'm not in that big of a rush because, you know, look, I mean, like my son lost his job for a bit because he teaches Taekwondo in a gym, and he's over there in California waiting for another damn shutdown that he's like, oh my God, it's going to kick him in the knees, you know, and he's trying to move out.
Yeah.
You can't do that, right? If you lose his job again, you know.
Yeah, it's made things different for a lot of people. I know my daughter had plans that have been delayed because of she wasn't able to work as much and all of that. Again, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today, and hopefully we'll get you back on to talk about more in the future.
Oh my God, yes. After the show airs, you're going to want me back on because you're just going to be like, what is he doing in the show? It's going to be so fun. Seriously. I'm not saying that because it's my brother-in-law's show or because I'm on it. I'm like, this is something I would actually watch. And I don't watch like TV. I watch, like I said, really weird stuff like Ancient Aliens and Secret Skinwalker Ranch and like Aliens. But this is a show I'd watch if I wasn't on it.
Well, I can't wait to see it. Dee Dee, we're so glad that you're back and we get a chance to see you on screen starting November 17th. Big Sky on ABC, 10 p.m. on Tuesday nights. Dee Dee, it's a treat to talk with you after watching you for all these years. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is really a treat from getting away from the TV for a minute.
All right. Be well. Stay safe, Dee Dee.
Oh, thank you. You too. Have a beautiful day.
Dee Dee Pfeiffer, Big Sky, coming to ABC November 17th. At 10 p.m. Tuesday nights.